54.
"This is it," the other Langdon shouts, a smile on his face. He's not gloating, not rubbing in his success. He's looking at his wife, ever confident that his actions will spare her from cancer's grasp. But his joy is misplaced. Not only is there a good chance we're all going to die in the next few seconds, but even if we survive back to the present, we'll still be in the very deadly company of Tsul Kalu. Worse, we'll have unleashed a monster into the modern world. How many people will he tear apart before someone figures out how to kill him? For now, at least, the giant seems distracted by the view above. The absolute void mesmerizes him. Then, for the first time, I see fear in his eyes. A deep, resounding rumble, like the roar of a waterfall, rushes through us. I can feel it in my body, in my thoughts. My body feels disassembled at a molecular level, but free of pain. For a moment, I cease to exist as anything other than thought. I cannot feel, hear, or see. There is no light, no darkness, just the mighty roar and a whooshing wind that sounds or feels like words sifting through me like a memory. Who touched my garments? What? Then I'm sewn back together, atoms linking. I feel again a strange tingling with no point of origin. My senses return with a clap of thunder. I can feel Owen wrapped in my arms, his body living but still. The roar comes to an abrupt end and my eyes snap open. We're engulfed in absolute darkness, both outside and inside. Synergy is without power. How long until we run out of air, until we freeze? White light blooms outside the window, filling the penthouse. In the brief moment I can bear to look, I see Tsul Kalu on his knees, arms raised, head turned up, mouth open in a silent scream. His body appears to be charred, somewhat turned to dust. Dark flakes peel away from his body as the light flares brighter, and my eyes are forced shut. Did the light do that to him? Did it affect anyone else? I open my eyes to look, but the pure white light overwhelms me, sending a quiver through my body.
"Don't look at him!"
Owen's small voice barely reaches my ear. Despite being right next to each other, he sounds a mile away. How could he tell who I was looking at? I wonder, did he look too, or is he talking about someone else? The whooshing words come back to mind. Did I really hear them? No, I decide. I experienced them, but who spoke them and what the hell does it mean? The bright pink glow on the inside of my eyelids fades, and despite Owen's warnings, I open my eyes. Above, the view is stars. A lot of them, bunched together and slowly drifting apart. We race away through brilliant flashing clouds that coalesce and ignite into even more stars. The universe is being formed around us. Great spirals of light twinkle to life and spin into the distance, everything rushing away from everything. A cloud of dust envelops us, sifting past the domed window, forming larger chunks that merge and grow. I recognize the scene, played now and fast forward rather than reverse. We're watching the Earth's formation, but we can only look up. I flinch when power is restored, the penthouse's orange glow returning. I'd been able to see thanks to the sourceless light of creation and the illumination cast off by forming galaxies, but now I can see more clearly. I stare at the lowest point on the dome, 6 feet above the floor. Why didn't Langdon put in any outward-facing windows? I wonder in frustration. The answer is simple. Short of a hot air balloon, a sniper's bullet wouldn't be able to find him in here. Not that any bullet in my time could pierce the thick glass. I flinch when the white prehuman thing pulls itself to the window's edge, looking out at what I want to see. Like me, it is dumbfounded and curious. "What are you?" I think, and the thing turns around to look at me. Pain racks my head, along with a sense of welcome and wonder. It almost felt like an invitation. Owen nudges me.
"It wants us to see."
We look into each other's identical eyes.
"The flux is over," he says. "We don't need to hide, and I feel stronger than ever, don't you?"
I hadn't taken stock of my physical state, but the moment I do, I know something has changed. All the aches, pains, bruises, wounds, and muscle pulls my body has been subjected to over the past day are gone. But that's not all.
My body feels new. I feel young, stronger than ever. As does the elder Langdon, still seated, grinning at his wife, who's still hidden from view by the chair back. He did it. I have no definitive proof, but my doubt slips away. We've been undone and remade whole. The clang of metal on tile snaps my attention to Sul Kalu. He's still locked in his pose of anguish. Or is he begging? The blade he used to stab the white prehuman has fallen from his loosened grasp. Blackened fingers crumble, giving way to white bone. His face looks sunken and burned, his flesh desiccated and cracked. Strangely, the saber-toothed head and skin were unaffected by whatever turned him into a husk. But is he dead? Has to be, I decide. And I allow curiosity to guide me out from under the table. I hold on to the table edge to keep myself upright in the zero gravity. Owen takes my hand and allows me to guide him out.
What are you doing?
Cassie asks. As aghast as she sounds, she slides out from hiding. When I push off with Owen, she joins us. An uncharacteristically silent Levi follows. Flores meets us partway, offering his hand to me as we glide on a collision course with a large creature that has killed men before and is capable of killing us. But I think it means us no harm. For now. With a tug, he redirects us toward the dome's edge. I catch the wall and cling in place, allowing Owen to hold himself against the sill. Cassie slides up beside Owen. To my left, Levi, Flores, and then the young Langdon arrive, all of us staring out through the thick window, watching as the world is formed. A string of giant rocks rolls through space, colliding and merging, growing larger and larger, until we're a part of it all, looking out at a crude horizon. Gravity takes hold, gently at first, and then pulling down with a force we're all familiar with. Our feet perch on cabinets and furniture, anything to keep our heads above the glass. There's an explosion of dust, and then, as the Earth continues to form, the dust in orbit drifts together in a ball. Soon the moon is born, its surface pummeled by a string of smaller asteroids. The prehuman creature chuffs, and I think it might be a laugh. When I meet his black eyes, I sense no anger. The cold stare I saw out in the forest when we were strange trespassers in his world has been replaced by a rabid fascination. How evolved is he? How much more evolved will his kind become? My questions don't seem all that important compared to what lies outside. So I ignore the 20-foot-long, intelligent albino dinosaur man and watch the show.
What is it?
The elder Langdon asks. What can you see? He's clearly afraid to unbuckle, maybe because there's a bumpy road ahead, or simply because he doesn't know what kind of road lies ahead. Then again, maybe he's just afraid of our Cretaceous stowaway. I flip in the bird and return to the view in time to see the sun's appearance. This far back in time, night was day and day was night. We flicker forward in time, the sun becoming a blur of light as it moves through the sky. Mountains rise and fall around us, glowing with magma. Oceans rise, covering the dome for a good 10 seconds that represents millions of years, and then fall again. Green springs to life, emerging from the ground in thin sheets before growing tall. Generations of landscape whoosh past, growing, twisting, evolving. It's not hard to see the planet growing and aging like a living thing. A life of its own, carrying infinitesimally small beings on its surface, like bacteria on skin. The world is recognizable now, and I'm pretty sure we're roaring past the Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. If the prehuman knows we're passing his stop, he doesn't react. He's lost to the sight, marveling at the creation of the planet our two species called home without ever meeting or knowing the other exists. When the world goes white and the Appalachians spring up around us, I know the journey is nearly complete. Future Langdon clutches the arms of his chair.
Hold on!
I shout, lowering myself to the floor as Adele grows up and around us, sealing us in stone. Even the prehuman follows our lead, dropping down. Nimble fingers clutch onto a chair, while its long prehensile tail snaps out and latches onto a support beam. Light flashes back into the penthouse when the mountain is carved away, bringing us into the final 100 years of our journey. And then, nothing.
The blue sky above us is unchanging.
What happened?
Levi asks. Are we there? Are we back? I push myself up and head for the window, but motion outside provides the answer for me. A crow flies through the sky, unaware that anything strange has happened.
What do you see?
The elder Langdon asks. I answer without thinking. Birds.
Anything living outside would have died during the vacuum,
he says, sounding hopeful.
We've made it.
Despite his hope, his words strike a chord. Everything outside would have died in the vacuum of space. Every animal, every dinosaur, every person. All of this for one woman. No, I decide, for a broken man.
Now, the elder Langdon says, sounding bold and in charge, if you'd all get the fuck out of my house, I will allow you to live and enjoy what remains of your lives, having seen the marvel of creation firsthand.
Future Langdon holds an AR-15 and looks like he knows how to use it. As we back away from the window, I wonder if I could draw my sidearm fast enough to shoot him. I doubt it, and it looks like some of the others were disarmed during the chaos. Their dropped weapons floated away in zero gravity and could be anywhere now. As I raise my hands and step into the center of the room with the others, the prehuman remains at the window, stretching its long neck to take in the Appalachians in all their summer glory. It's oblivious to the confrontation taking place behind it, and has no idea what he is saying.
Each of you may leave, Future Langdon says. I have not and do not bear any of you ill will.
You were willing to kill thousands, I tell him, my father among them.
Regrettable, but that time has passed,
he says, slipping his finger around the trigger.
Last chance, you can all walk out that door.
He glances at Sewell Kalu's ruined body, and then at the prehuman.
And take your albino pet with you, please. You are all free to go.
Well, everyone except him.
Future Langdon raises his weapon, turns it on his younger self, and pulls the trigger. The bullet punches into young Langdon's gut, slips through the soft organs within, and passes out the far side, spraying a cloud of blood onto the charred giant's face, where it is absorbed.